members of Catamount Ranch and Club versus Catamount Development. Council President Reddy?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, we'll hear that case first. Second case is People versus Armolino. Council President Reddy in that case? Very well, we'll take that case second. Most of you have argued here before, but let me simply review the ground rules briefly. These cases are set for 15 minutes aside. You'll be guided by a lighting system on the podium that works as follows. When you start, a green light comes on. When 10 minutes have expired, the amber light comes on. And when your full 15 minutes have expired, the red light will come on. You'll be guided by a timer that counts backwards from 15. So you should have good guidance as to how much time you have left. We've read the briefs in your cases. We're familiar with the facts as set forth in the briefs. So to the extent you wish to proceed directly to your legal argument, that's fine with us. But the case is yours to argue as you wish. We would ask you to stay close to the podium, please, because we're recording your arguments. We find it helpful to go back and listen to them occasionally. And if you stray from the podium, the microphone will not pick up your voice well. Also be advised that the arguments are going to be available over the internet within a day or two following today's argument. So if there's anything of a particularly confidential nature you don't want out there, be guided accordingly. If anybody in the audience or council has a cell phone or a pager, please ensure it's turned off at this time. And you can raise that podium and take it down with a little toggle switch that's there on the podium. All right, we're ready for argument.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Todd Seelman, registration number 20469, on behalf of the appellants, who are the plaintiffs below. With me at council table is Jamie Cotter, who is with me on briefs. For ease and convenience of the argument, Your Honors, I would like to refer to the Appalee Catamount Development simply as Catamount, and Appalee SV Timbers Steamboat as Timbers. The trial court engaged in a number of errors. Each of these errors contributed to the next error, resulting in a snowball effect, which contributed to the dismissal of our complaint. The primary error was that the court wrongly decided what document contributes to the contract itself between the parties. The trial court found that only the membership agreement constituted the contract. That is an error. The membership agreement is simply an application. That application was used by each applicant to apply for membership. The application itself does not provide the essential terms of the contract. What it did provide was an integration clause, which integrated the membership plans and rules and regulations expressly. The membership plans and the rules and regulations, that's where the obligations of Catamount to the members exist. That's where the rules and regulations exist. The trial court ignored the membership plans and ignored the rules and regulations, focused solely on the membership application. From that error, everything else fell in place, because that document doesn't supply the terms which supported the claims for declaratory judgment and injunction that the appellants were relying on. The membership application, Judge Richmond.
What's the integration language in the agreement that you're referencing? I think it's the top of page 4.
The integration clause is at the bottom of, it's CD electronically, it's CD 189 and 190.
I don't have my CD player.
Oh, okay. It's at the bottom of the membership application itself. It says itself that the applicant has received and reviewed the membership plans and rules and regulation and is expressly bound by it. And then if you go to the next page, it says, and the membership plans and rules and regulations expressly supersede any prior oral or written argument, any prior oral written agreement. So
supersedes the representations and warranties, but it doesn't really say, it's not the classic language of contract integration. I have a little problem with saying this is integration. I'm just not quite sure.
For instance, the language itself requires that at the time of the application, that the membership plan and rules and regulations were presented to the applicant. There's no question about that. It requires it before a signature can occur. At the time the applicant is accepted, the membership plans, each of them, the 89, the 98, the 99, and 2002, each have the same superseding language, where the plans and the rules and regulations supersede any prior oral or written agreement, which would include the membership application itself. It was intended by the parties, always, that the membership plans and the rules and regulations were the guiding contract for the each party's behavior.
But didn't the trial court, even though it said that there was no contract arising from the membership plan, it then went on for two or three pages to interpret the terms of the membership plan, to apply the terms of the membership plan, to talk about the cabin memberships, etc. So I know the court did say that, but in the end, it seems like it actually applied the membership plan, applied it, and made its decision based on what was in the membership plan.
The trial court's order was expressed. It said that the only contract between the parties was the membership application itself. The court down below construed the membership plans and the rules and regulations as something else. I think she construed it as just a notion or the mere expectation of the parties. The trial court below never considered the membership plans and the rules and regulations as part of the contract to determine whether there were any rights that the appellants would have to succeed at trial. The trial court excluded them.
Mr. Silver, yes. Let me ask you if I may. Let's assume for purposes of my question only that we agree with you. You had a lot of plaintiffs below, including the founding members organization. Up here you've got three. Who signed which agreements? Did each of the individuals sign a 98, a 99, and a 2002 agreement? Or which agreement is the governing document that you allege governs here?
Well, each member executed a membership application, the form of which was attached to the complaint. The appellants were members either in 98, 99, 2000, 2001, or 2002. They joined at different times, where different membership plans would have applied.
That's my question.
Yes.
Which applies to your three plaintiffs up here? You've only got three, I think, that are appealing this, if I'm not mistaken.
That's incorrect, Your Honor. The founding members themselves, the organization, that is not an appellant, but all the individuals are.
All right. Then I must have a wrong at issue sheet. I'm sorry. That's our internal.
Of course,
problem.
Judge Caseville. Okay. No, that's fine. So, once the trial court separated the membership plans and the rules and regulations from the membership agreement, which is erroneous, the next issue was it modifiable at will? The trial court said it's modifiable at will because it's revocable at will. That's erroneous. The membership plans and rules and regulations clearly put forth that is revocation occurs only for cause. It's not a revocable at will contract, it's a revocable for cause contract. Therefore, the court's view that revocation at will is tantamount to modification at will is erroneous. It was revocable only for cause, and it was never revoked.
Well, let's talk about revocation as opposed to modification, because they're two different concepts.
Yes.
Let's assume that this is not a revocation, because there's a specific clause that talks about getting rid of a member, essentially revoking the license.
Yes.
What you're arguing for, as I understand it, is that there's no ability to modify the terms and conditions, and the primary term that you're relying upon is the phrase that the rights to modify are subject to the member's rights.
In the 98 plan, Judge Casebolt, there was a provision that modification subject to the member's membership rights.
Right.
But modification wasn't unilateral. It wasn't exclusively in the purview of Catamount. Modification could occur with this contract or any contract if there was notice, consent, and consideration, none of which occurred.
Is there a clause that specifically requires notice, consent, and consideration in the agreement?
Actually, it's silent, Your Honor. And at the dismissal stage, inferences should go to the appellants because it's a light most favorable to the appellants. The contract drafted by Catamount was silent as to that. Now, there are provisions in the rules and regulations which permit that exclusive right, the exclusivity component. That's absent in the provision on modification. It wasn't an exclusive right to modify, or a right not to give notice, or a right not to give or have consent by the appellants.
Well, if the agreement is silent, where from where does this consent, notice, and consideration come?
From the law, case law, Your Honor, Griselle.
So you're relying upon case law on revocable licenses, essentially.
I'm relying on case law for the proposition that under Colorado law, modification requires consent and consideration. Both were absent here. Moreover, it's not just modifications that's at issue here. The issue is, did they have the right, Catamount have the right, to sell fractional memberships to Timbers? Timbers is a third party. Timbers is not Catamount. Timbers is not an affiliate of Catamount. The only way, under the agreement, that a fractional membership could be sold is under two conditions. One, if Catamount is the owner of the fractional unit, or if Catamount's affiliate is the owner of the fractional unit. Neither of those two circumstances exist here. An affiliate is defined in the contract as an entity that has 50% or more controlling interest. Timbers is not that party. The second requirement was that if fractional memberships are sold to Catamount or Catamount's affiliate when they own the building, that the building exists physically in the geographic space of the communities. There are only two communities in Catamount Ranch. There's Catamount Golf, which is 710 acres, and Catamount Lake, that's 3,200 acres. If the physical property is within that geographic space and the physical property is owned by Catamount or its affiliate, then there was a provision to allow for cabin memberships to be sold.
Wasn't there also a provision that allowed Catamount to declare other communities to be a part of the organization?
To declare other places that are designated in the communities, not to redraft the geographic confines of communities.
You're saying that the description of the document that says we can describe other communities has to be within
the geographic confines. Because initially in 1998, Your Honor, there was an anticipation that Catamount would build a structure on property that may have fractional units available. That never occurred. The language doesn't change. The restriction that Catamount or its affiliate be the owner has never changed. 1998, 1999, or 2002. It's always been the same. That restriction has never changed. Lastly, there's a restriction that Catamount can't overcome. That is the corporate designation. No member who's a corporation can't just apply the membership to anyone. They must designate. That's in the membership agreement and in every plan. Timbers is a corporation. It is required, if it purchases a membership, to designate one person or a family to use the membership. Timbers isn't doing that. Timbers is applying it to a whole host of fractional units divided into between 1/8 and 1/365th, and then taking those units and trading them in a worldwide Timbers reciprocity program. That's not permitted. The corporate identity provision restricts it, prevents it from happening. I'd like to reserve the last 2.5 minutes of my time.
Did you allege in your complaint that Timbers has violated this corporate ownership section of the membership plan? Was that ever raised? I don't see it being addressed by the...
We allege in the paragraph 37, 38, 39, and 40 that Timbers is not an affiliate. It's not a controlling interest, but we didn't allege or have a claim directly against Timbers.
And it hasn't happened yet that Timbers has reassigned or transferred its, has it?
We don't know, Your Honor, because we are dismissed. We don't know what the status of it is, which is why further discovery is necessary.
Frankly, I'm wondering whether your complaint was just premature until Timbers makes the assignment. Maybe there's no violation of that provision.
Well, the declaratory judgment statute provides that we have the right, if we feel that our rights are to be infringed, we have a right to have the court declare that. But we never got that factual point across because we dismissed right away. The court would have to find those facts. I'll reserve the balance of my time, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Elizabeth Harris. I'm here on behalf of Catamount Development. And with me at council table is Leslie Eaton, who represents SV Timbers. I will be presenting the argument on behalf of both of the appellees. The declaration that the members are seeking here is absolutely inconsistent with the party's bargain, which is why the district court dismissed the case and said that there was no set of circumstances after reviewing these documents under which the members could prevail on their claim here. Under the membership agreement, it's a quite straightforward agreement here. The members agreed to pay a membership dues and a membership deposit and to be bound by the membership plan as amended from time to time. They also agreed they had absolutely no equity interest in the club and that every single management and operational decision would be made by Catamount, who owned the club.
Ms. Harris, is it critical to your argument that the membership agreement is the only document we look to?
It's not. Let's say that the membership plan is part of the contract. That advances the members' argument not at all. The membership plan, in effect, in 1998, when the members agree that this was a private and exclusive club, called for fractional ownerships and fractional memberships that went with those ownership units.
Help us find the page in the plan where it refers to fractional interest. I don't see that those words anywhere in there, and I don't think you're suggesting they're in there, but there's some provision that...
No, Your Honor. They are called cabin members in the earliest version, and that's on page 3 of the 1998 plan.
And it says they may have the ownership structure allows for persons to own intervals for use of the unit. That's the language you're talking about that you call fractional interest because it's
that's correct.
Otherwise so hard to say.
Right. It's the concept is that there would be multiple owners of a single unit and that one membership would be assigned to each of those units. That's a fractional membership. That was in the plan in 1998, right there for everybody who joined this club to see. The other thing that's in the 1998 plan, when the club admittedly, concededly, was a private exclusive club, was the idea that there could be reciprocity between the Catamount members and members of other clubs. And that appears on page 9 of the 1998 agreement. It specifically alerts anybody joining the club in 1998 that Catamount is contemplating this kind of reciprocal agreement with other clubs. There's also a membership cap, because Catamount did want the club to remain private and exclusive. And so there is a 395 membership cap. There is also in the membership plan, if you want to include it in the contract, a provision that says Catamount can modify the terms of the membership plan, subject only to the members' membership rights.
So what are the members' membership rights then?
Well, they're certainly not the right to exclude fractional members. And we know that because the unambiguous language of the contract, and everybody here agrees this is an unambiguous contract. It is not the members' position that somehow there needs to be fact-finding because this is an ambiguous contract and it needs to be remanded so that we can do some fact-finding down below. That is not their position. Their position has always been this is an unambiguous contract. But we know the members' membership rights have nothing to do with who can join the club because those rights were reserved to Catamount specifically in each and every membership plan. On page 5 of the 1998 plan, it says, Catamount may offer memberships to people who purchase homes in the communities or other persons determined by Catamount from time to time. That is quite a broad reservation of rights. On page 10, it says that Catamount has exclusive authority to accept members, set membership deposits, dues, fees, and charges, establish rules and regulations, and control the management and affairs of the club. So there is no possible way that this unambiguous contract gives to the members the right to exclude fractional members from the club. The membership rights are delineated both in the membership agreement and in the membership plan. In the membership agreement, it's the rights that I've mentioned. Pay your membership deposit, pay your dues, be bound by the rules and regulations, and in return, their rights are their membership deposit is refundable. They may come on to the property and use the club facilities, and they get a right of first refusal if Catamount decides to sell the club. In the membership plan, the members' rights are set forth in a provision entitled Acknowledgement of Membership Rights. So it's fairly easy to see how the two go together. The Acknowledgement of Membership Rights says that the members have certain rights with respect to equity conversion of the club and with respect to the sale of the club to a third party, period. And those are the membership rights that the next section is referring to when it says Catamount may modify subject to the members' membership rights. The reference to case law about a party not being able to modify absent consent or further consideration, that's fine as a broad proposition, but it has nothing to do with this case. The reason Catamount can modify the membership plan is because it says it can in the membership plan and in the membership agreement. And if the members wanted to join a club where they got to decide what happened at the club, where they got to make operational decisions, they could have done that. That's called an equity club, and they certainly could have done that, but they didn't. Every single one of these members was on notice when they joined this club what the legal arrangement was between the parties. It could not have been more clear from the membership agreement. What they got through this contract was a revocable license to use the club facilities, and that's it. But to get back to your question, really, if the members' position is that by excluding the membership plan as part of the contract, all else falls out here, that's just not true. All of the rights that the members have and that Catamount has, let's say they're in that contract. In 1998, all of these things were true about the club: reciprocity, fractional memberships, the membership cap. And right now, Catamount is doing nothing to change the fundamental features of that 1998 plan.
Can you point us to the reciprocity section that you're relying upon?
Yes, Your Honor. That is on page 9 of the 1998 plan. And there's a section entitled Reciprocal Use and Access Agreements. And it talks about the fact that the club may, in its sole discretion, decide that it wants to participate in a multi-club kind of an arrangement where members of Catamount would use other clubs and those club members would get to use Catamount.
Well, that sounds a little different, though, than simply saying you can allow fractional interest owners who reside elsewhere and want to trade weeks to use this club.
Well, the idea that there would be reciprocity among clubs is something that the members were certainly on notice of in 1998. To the extent that the reciprocity agreement in the SV Timbers contract is slightly different, or to the extent that the fractional membership provision is slightly different, to the extent these things don't match up word for word, what the district court said, and it's true, is that Catamount can modify or amend those provisions. Really, what the members are saying is, I mean, they can't possibly be saying that Catamount doesn't have a right to modify the agreement. It says everywhere that Catamount has a right to modify the agreement. I think the crux of their argument is, look, you can't modify the agreement to change the fundamental nature of this club. The reason we joined the club is because we wanted to be part of an exclusive and private golf club. So don't change the fundamental nature. Now, let's say that's true. Let's accept that that's true, that Catamount can't modify the membership plan to change the very nature of this club from private to public. But there is nothing that's happening here that is changing the fundamental nature of the club from a private club to a public club. The 40 fractional memberships that are being sold to SV Timbers do not raise the membership cap at all. This is exactly what was proposed under the 1998 plan.
They don't raise it on any given day.
That's correct.
But the number of persons who may end up playing golf at this club could be a heck of a lot more than 395, obviously.
But at any given time, mm-hmm. only 395 will play.
Plenty of tee times available. Let me ask you about the corporate part, though. These 40 interests were sold to Timbers.
That's correct.
Where does Timbers, has Timbers designated a member, an individual, to be the member? Don't they have to do that under this plan, assuming the plan is part of the contract?
Well, if the plan, there's two responses to that. If assuming the plan is part of the contract, corporate memberships and fractional memberships were treated differently under the plan. So the fact that the members are now trying to say, well, this is a corporate membership, it's not. This is a fractional membership. And there was a provision for fractional memberships that said you get one membership per unit. That's how it was always contemplated. This is not a corporate membership. We're not changing the corporate memberships at all.
So but is what's happening then, Timbers is essentially saying, we want to reserve these for advance sales to individual fractional interest owners?
Well, no, SV Timbers is purchasing the actual memberships, and then they will be assigned to 40 units, which is just what the fractional membership provision contemplated, that there would be one fractional membership associated with each of the units.
But doesn't the corporate owner have to designate a member? Doesn't the designated member have to submit a membership agreement? Doesn't he have to be approved by the club? Have they gone through those steps of this provision?
Well, again, it's not a corporate membership, and if it were, Catamount could come in and amend the corporate membership provision of this plan to account for what's happening at SV Timbers. But the corporate memberships and the fractional memberships are different. But under the current terms of the SV Timbers agreement, cabin members are going to be approved by the club, which is exactly what it says under the fractional membership provision of the 1998 plan. It says, hey, you've got to get approval for each cabin member, and in fact, that's exactly what's going to happen. It says privileges are going to be one unit for one membership. That's exactly what's going to happen. The club privileges are only allowed to be used while the fractional member is in residence.
This
that's exactly what's going
the,
to happen.
You're reading to us from the reservation agreement, I take it?
Correct. In the reservation agreement, it sets forth all of the features, the privileges.
You don't have a copy of that. You know, it wasn't part of the record in this case.
The reservation agreement is not?
It wasn't part of the pleadings, excuse me. The court below didn't seem to have the reservation.
Yes, the court below did. We, Catamount submitted that with its motion to dismiss the first amended complaint.
And I assume the parties have argued it, it looks like, without objection. So should we consider that document that wasn't attached to the pleadings?
Yes, and yes, the court should consider it. And I actually think both parties assume that it was part of the record because it was part of the record in the district court, and the district court did consider it.
Reviewed under CRCP 12b-5, though, we're only supposed to look at what's attached to the complaint. So that's the reason, I think, for Judge Richmond's question and mine as well.
I think that the court can consider anything that's sort of integral to that is integral to those other documents that it's considering. So if you're going to consider the membership plan, the membership agreement, the rules and regulations, I think the court could consider the reservation agreement. And the district court certainly did. But in any case, even if you don't consider it, the 1998 plan sets forth the features of the fractional memberships. And those features, even if you just accept what the amended complaint is saying, those features are not being fundamentally altered by the sale of the memberships to SV Timbers here. The important thing here is that the members are retaining the private nature of their club. They themselves say what makes the club private. It's the restrictions on categories of membership, restrictions on total number of memberships, the tee time reservations, the reciprocity, the restrictions on individual and family and corporate memberships, the restrictions on assignment and transfer, in order for this to be converted into some sort of a public club, all of those things would have to fundamentally change. And here, not one of them is fundamentally changing. Even if you have a concern about the corporate membership structure, and you think that that operates sort of with and hand in hand with the fractional membership provision, that's a modification that Catamount can make. This is what the parties bargained for. Catamount gets to run its club. The members get to come and use the facilities. Their remedy, the moment they decide they are not satisfied with the club, is to join another club. We have not changed the fundamental nature of this club from private to public, and that's their real concern. We've kept the member total membership cap, and we've kept each of the contemplated categories of membership from the 1998 plan. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Your Honors, I have a few minutes for rebuttal. There has been a fundamental change in this agreement. It occurred here today. There is no corporate membership. The corporate ownership limitation for membership applies to every single membership sold by Catamount. The difference is that if the membership, regardless of what it's called, is owned by a corporation, they are required under the application in every single membership plan to designate one person to be the member. That is not what's going on with the sale to SV Timbers of 40 fractionals. That is an express provision. It's not implied. It's not inferred. It's expressed. What was said here today changes that. The viewpoint that there was a reciprocity or known reciprocity is false. The reciprocity provisions in the membership plans apply to the club itself. The club may enter into reciprocal arrangements with other clubs so that all members, regardless of type, have the same reciprocal provisions. That's not what's going on here. SV Timbers is the only member who has the right to assign this reciprocity. No one else, just SV Timbers. It's a fundamental change. As to the operations, counsel for the Appellees has pointed the court to language about its operations. Nowhere in that language does it say that Catamount has the right to change the structure of the club, add new categories of memberships, change the number of members in each category or the maximum number, nor change the corporate designation requirement. Judge Casebolt.
You're out of time, sir.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your arguments today. The case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course. As soon as counsel can be prepared on People versus Armolino, we'll hear that case.